Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, eCampus's news podcast on the latest and greatest happenings in higher ed tech this month. I'm Kevin Hogan, and I'm glad you found us. In the spirit of our podcast title, we've decided to innovate a bit with the format. We're looking to go a little bit deeper into the topics that are important to you by discussing them with some of higher ed's most insightful experts. Let us know what you think. We're starting off with a conversation with eSchool contributor and education expert Stephen Ball. Steve is a faculty member at Winona State University, where he teaches in the Leadership Education Department. Prior to joining WSU, Steve spent 28 years in the K-12 school systems in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, and 2 years teaching in the University of Wisconsin system. In this conversation, Steve explores some of the key characteristics that define effective leaders in higher education: the ability to inspire and motivate others, a commitment to innovation and continuous improvement, and a deep understanding of the needs and challenges faced by students, teachers, and parents alike. He shares a wealth of insights and practical tips for educators seeking to develop their leadership skills and create positive change within their schools and communities. From fostering a culture of collaboration and trust to leveraging technology and data to drive student success, Steve offers a wealth of actionable advice for anyone seeking to make a difference in higher ed. Have a listen. Well, Steve, thanks so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it, and I appreciate you taking your time to share your insights with us.
Welcome. Glad to be here.
You know, we've had conversations probably more years than I want to go back on, but I know it was involved us showing each other our handy new iPhones, I think, and maybe talking about this cool thing called Twitter, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we were talking about Y2K issues or not.
You know? I wasn't that far. Yeah, it wasn't that bad, right? That wasn't last century, but yeah. But certainly in all of our conversations, I don't believe global pandemics really ever kind of entered the picture. You know, over the past couple of years, just as an observer of the higher ed space, you know, and looking at the work that you have had to do and your colleagues have had to do has been nothing more than yeoman's work in terms of keeping things together, keeping students together and your organizations through this madness. So first, I'll just say congratulations and thank you for all that sort of work. I'm hoping we could talk a little bit about what it took to do that, maybe some of the leadership skills that you witnessed. Now, I know in your work, I mean, that's kind of what you're analyzing anyway. Talk a little bit about what this transition was, what this acceleration was, what the experience was like from your perspective and from your fellow administrator and education leader perspectives.
You know, I think the biggest issue is first, you know, I go back to when I was talking about meeting with students to enter, you know, an online doctoral program before, and I had a lot of people who, hey, I really want to have a technology focus, I want to do that sort of stuff, and then they're like, but my colleagues don't, right? So one of the big shifts is I don't think you have a lot of people anymore who are really dragging their feet saying, oh, I can't do this. Everybody has sort of realized it's doable. Now, some people don't want to do it and still want to say, hey, let's retrench.
Yeah.
But I think the concept of, well, there's no way you can possibly teach a course online and get the same rigor and robustness that you do in a traditional face-to-face setting. I think that question at least has generally been answered.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's a first piece is that, yes, it's actually, it's feasible. So then the question becomes, okay, what do I need? And what are the resources that can be there? And so you see everything during the pandemic, from what one of my instructional designer colleagues explained, is the electronic correspondence course. Here's your PDF. Email the answers back to me when you're done. To people who've really fully engaged with all of the new learning technologies that are there. And I think that, you know, you're seeing people who never wanted to use video and things like that. And they're like, oh gosh, I hate to do videos of myself. And I'm definitely one of those people. But now it's just as a matter of course, I do all of my lectures as video and effectively flip my classroom you know, even when we're meeting synchronously. So the students have the lectures ahead of time. You know, they've asked, most of my students have asked, well, can we get the PowerPoint as well so that we can follow along as we do the video? And I just see that people are thinking there's a lot more to be done than historically was, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not just kind of an alternate in order to save logistical time for people and windshield time. It's actually a legitimate option. I think as you start to see folks coming from more disparate regions into the same schools, I think you see a lot of positive, you know, conversation and information is, you know, bubbling up and bubbling around, and people are starting to look at things in different ways that, you know, in my region, we may have always done it this way or in our state, but now we're saying, oh, well, other schools do it differently, right?
Yeah.
I think that's positive, all that cross-pollination.
So, you know, I call this the great beta test for education, right? The forced migration to the remote setup, the forced use of Zoom. And it seemed to me that the best leaders took those things and embraced them and helped kind of bring the culture of their institutions together and showed empathy, you know, during those first few weeks of craziness. But now kind of have found some of the silver linings is what you're saying. It's just like, all right, well, look, we had to use these technologies, whether we liked it or not. Now we have a culture that is used to it. And why not just kind of enhance what we've learned from this experience?
And it does. And well, I think it's seen things that as people are working remotely, for instance, you know, I can get to two meetings back to back.
Yeah.
Even if they're in different cities now.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot more flexibility in as long as the logistical support is there. And so you need both the executive support to say, hey, it's okay to be flexible. We don't have to do things the way we used to do it. For instance, we're supposed to have office hours. Well, my office hours are pretty flexible. Text me and I'll jump on Zoom and talk to you, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much any time that works for you. I don't have to physically sit in an office, which is not necessarily a good use of faculty time.
Right.
But you also need the technical resources to make sure it can be done. And then the key is, all right, what's coming next? And I think you're seeing IT folks really starting to say, all right, now that we've kind of got this down and everybody knows it's available, how can I make things more interactive? Especially for asynchronous things, you know, what can we do to extend or augment reality? And there's still a lot potentially out there, I think, but and people are still kind of playing around in that space. I was at the Texas TCEA, and there was a big virtual reality demonstration presentation being done with everybody in line to say, hey, let's do that. Let's see what we can do with, you know, more makerspace kind of things. But there's just that ability of what can we do to really extend learning so a student can go in and check things out on their own a little bit. And I think you're going to see a more modularization of a lot of courses. We've been using the Carnegie unit for a long time because, of course, if a university wanted to be part of the TIA, what's now TIA CREF, you had to use the Carnegie unit, right? That was why we're all there. But I think you're going to see more modularized instruction so that, you know, if a student's taking a school finance course, for instance, but they know they're going to work in special ed, well, let's make sure you do the module that talks about federal special ed financing as opposed to just your state stuff. Or you're going to be an athletic director, well, do the module that deals with activity funds and non-revenue accounts, right? So the ability to really personalize instruction more, but that requires a lot of build out time to really do that effectively. And so your leadership has to realize that, hey, none of this is going to just happen overnight, right? We can build this out, but we've got to provide the time and the resources. And probably the biggest resource at the university level is just good instructional design teams. You need people who can, you can really work through things. And I would say they took a huge hit, you know, during the pandemic, just from a standpoint of you've got all these people who were never using Zoom who now want to use it. So those IT folks, especially the design folks, really, we need to figure out how to make sure that they have the capacity they need to continue to expand.
Yeah,
what we're doing.
One other interesting thing I thought that you said was when you were talking about like the kind of end of your office hours, where it's gone from like, well, here I'm going to be here from 3 to 5. Now it's just like, more of a flexible one-to-one interaction. It definitely seems to me that that is one dynamic that might be a shift in terms of leadership styles, where maybe BP before the pandemic, you might have a faculty meeting, right? Where you have 30 people in a room or whatever. And now maybe is it more of a one-to-one engagement with faculty and students and your greater community?
There's some, I would still say there's still a definite need for that collaborative work through department meetings. And I would argue that, like, is our department chair team meets, we still meet physically.
Yeah.
Right. Every couple of weeks, because there's an advantage to that. And we're trying to do more things on campus to make sure people feel part of the community.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're doing something for Pi Day next week. And we're going to do something, you know, for Administrative Professionals Day physically on campus.
Yeah.
And try to make sure that everybody kind of has that opportunity for those social events. That's the one thing that people kind of lose out on in the virtual environment.
Yeah.
But as far as those one-to-one meetings with students, I just put on my syllabus that basically call me anytime from basically 10 in the morning until 8 at night. Before that, you'll interrupt my workout and my dog's routine. After that evening, you tend to offend my wife. She's like, why are people calling me so late?
Yeah.
In between there, pretty much, you know, call me.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's, and many faculty are that way. Not everybody, obviously different places in their life. But I think the more flexibility we can provide to students, the better.
Yeah.
And obviously you're seeing more demand for that. In only teaching graduate students, right? All of my students have full-time employment. So lots of them try to sneak it in during their prep periods or lunches, but it's kind of unreasonable for me to expect everybody's going to get a hold of me between 10 and noon, Mondays and Thursdays. Right?
Yeah. Yep. And from a student perspective, is any of this even novel? I mean, this is just the way you operate, right? I mean, after the past 3 years, if you're 20 years old or 25 years old, this isn't anything that's necessarily new.
I think it's new for them when somebody is following the old rules.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah. Well, you know, they didn't get back to me. Well, yeah, because it's spring break.
Right.
Oh, I would have never thought of that. And again, having been a superintendent way too long, my cell phone is my electronic leash.
Right.
You know, and I just still respond to students in that way. And some of my colleagues are much better at about a work-life balance, and they just don't respond when they're not at work, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. Within those kind of traditional parameters that we were used to. Talk a little bit about the other kind of major topic I see as far as leaders' concern list is cybersecurity, protecting the data as much as protecting students. Talk a little bit about how that's accelerated.
Well, you just saw that there's a ransom for Minneapolis public schools data right now. And so yeah. If I had $1 million sitting around, I would buy it for them so they could have it back. But and cybersecurity is really difficult. It's a difficult issue because what you see, generally speaking, in my IT experience is as soon as people want to talk cybersecurity, they want to lock it all down, right? And they're looking for 100% keeping everything closed down. Well, you can do that, but you have to unplug the machine,
mm-hmm.
right? I can make any computer you want 100% safe. I just unplug it,
right?
Turn it off, right? But it's not useful to anybody that way.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's kind of where you are. You have to make sure that you balance out accessibility and usability with security. It's like when you have to change your password every 3 weeks or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got to be a 47-digit hexadecimal number using at least 14 special characters in something from the Cyrillic alphabet.
Right.
You know, and sadly, that exaggeration isn't too far off sometimes.
No.
Right? The problem is, well, what are you going to do with that password? You're going to write it down.
Right.
Right? I mean, the studies will say it's better to let people have a password that they can remember and are comfortable with than making them change all the time. It doesn't actually help. It actually hinders security. And so cybersecurity has to be practical and pragmatic and realize there's always a chance of loss. Mm-hmm. So make sure that the data that you don't want to have get out is truly secure and only the people who need it have access to it. But are you going to make sure that everything is so locked down that it's no longer usable?
Yeah.
And that's the balance that I think, and of course, then every time something like Minneapolis comes up in the news, you know, the pendulum swings a little too far to the let's lock it all down approach.
Right.
And I'm not saying don't, you know, I worked in a district when I first got there, they didn't even require faculty of passwords. And I required passwords, which, you know, set off a lot of drama. There is definitely that need for security, but it has to be usable, balanced security.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the issue of school shootings. There's no way, unfortunately, to present, you know, to protect 100% of the time, right? All the security in the world, there's somebody who really wants in can always figure out a way in.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you deter people as much as possible, but still not make children, families, and the staff feel like they're going into, you know, a maximum security prison just to go to school every day.
Right.
There's that balance there. And that is sort of my constant drumbeat with cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Because I think so many CIOs are waking up at 2 a.m. going, crap, if there was a data breach, what am I going to do?
Right.
Right. And so they let that security guy who does not have an instructional background usually tighten things down to the point where there's not going to be a data breach. But the problem is then the system doesn't work.
Right. You're losing access to resources. You're losing the ability to communicate with each other. And it's more trouble than it's worth on this.
Well, then what happens is then people figure out alternatives.
Right.
Right. And they just go around.
Yeah.
And those are much unsafer than a reasonable amount of security.
Right. Well, so we talked about the past. We talked about the pandemic and the recent past and the state of play of how things are now. Talk a little bit about where you see that we're kind of coming out of this period of madness and returning to whatever we want to call normal. What are some of the leadership attributes you think are going to be a top priority for education executives in the higher ed space, say, let's say over the next 3 to 5 years?
I think you're going to really need people who can be flexible and can really differentiate for their team. In the same way we ask students, you know, that we ask the teachers to differentiate for students, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And so there's really that need to figure out what people need and why, and really understand, hey, what can we do? And not to get too excited about sort of those flash, you know, point issues like security, or just to like, hey, let's chase virtual reality because it's there.
Yeah.
But to figure out what are we going to do and be very pragmatic in the fact that we're going to do what our students need and our instructors need. And I think that's key. And I think you're going to need to also figure out how to continue to retain good folks and build strong teams, because I think we've become somewhat siloed during, you know, the pandemic, because we just don't see each other in the same way.
Right.
And we're probably not going to anymore.
Right.
So to be able to build that team, a cohesive team that can work together, so the network folks, the security folks, and the instructional designers can all work in the best interest of students and faculty. And so, you know, you're looking for very pragmatic leaders who can develop that trust and make good decisions in balance. You know, there's a lot of balancing between access, security, new toys, making sure the current systems are really strong. And one other thing I think you're going to see more of a desire for is dealing with the information, you know, and that learning analytics or educational informatics, if you want, but really starting to take all that data that we've got collected and doing something effective with it.
Well, it will be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, I think that now that we kind of, I don't know, feels back to normal as much as it's going to be, but as you said, I mean, there is just this new element of flexibility that is there for the taking. I think it's incumbent upon leaders to carry that flexibility. So as always, Steve, fascinating conversation. Appreciate your insights and look forward to carrying on this conversation in the coming months.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Thanks. Always a pleasure.
So that about wraps it up for this episode. Be sure to check back on ecampusnews.com for all the latest and greatest news and analysis for what's happening in the higher ed tech space. Remember, eCampus is always free and always helping innovative educators just like you. Until next time, I'm Kevin Hogan for eCampus News.